From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is the show that gets you behind the real lives of Lehigh faculty. This is Prof Talk.
Hi, welcome to another edition of Prof Talks. Today, again, is another special edition. We have Andrew McGill, who is an associate editor at The Atlantic. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Okay, so can you tell me what drew you to Lehigh today?
Well, I'm here to talk as part of the DataX initiative at The Atlantic. I do kind of a weird mix. I cover both politics and I also do coding for the magazine. So a lot of times I'm using data and I'm using statistics, I'm using visualizations to tell stories about the election, about Trump, about Clinton, about America. So it seemed kind of like a natural fit with some of the things that they're trying to build here. And I also used to work in the Lehigh Valley. So coming back to Lehigh was a little bit of a homecoming for me. So it was an easy decision to make.
I just really wanted to ask this question right off the bat. So because of social media, anyone can be a citizen journalist. However, it's so much more demanding of regular journalists today because we have to know coding skills, we have to know how to use statistics, we have to know HTML. So do you think the barrier of entry has increased or decreased?
That's a really good point. And a lot of folks ask me, especially in journalism programs, should I learn to code? Should my students learn to code? And I actually have a hard time saying that every person who wants to be a journalist should learn computer programming. Just because, you know, if someone told me, Andrew, you should learn Chinese to be good at journalism, I would be in deep trouble because I have no interest in doing that. The reason that I'm good at using coding in journalism is because I was a nerd basically in middle school and did this stuff for a long time. And it was an interest of mine that I brought into things. I think that most journalists can get by really with some pretty basic stuff in terms of computer programming and statistics. It's really just knowing how to manipulate things on a spreadsheet. That's 90% of what makes a data journalist, air quotes, a data journalist. So I don't think it's as high a barrier as some people think it is.
So for students now, like, what would you recommend to kind of get them into the digital world?
Yeah, I think that, this is perhaps an antiquated notion, but you know, every person I've talked to that works in the digital world in journalism still says that having the ability to tell a story succinctly and well is the most important thing. We have tons of developers already in the world that are great at what they do. They usually work for Google, who couldn't really report or tell a story as well as a junior at Lehigh that's working for the Brown and White. You know, that really the basis of it is you need to be able to do the basic reporting that propels any kind of journalism. That being said, I think having facility with being able to tell stories using other mediums, you know, social media is the easy thing to say, like, okay, you should know how to use Twitter and Snapchat and Facebook, obviously, because that's a lot of way that people consume news. But I think a lot of folks are probably coming into Lehigh knowing how to do that already. The other thing is really just having familiarity and facility with whatever your editor asks you to publish online, because online writing to some degree is different from newspaper writing. There's obviously unlimited space, but there's also extremely limited audience attention. If you click on a story, you can only expect folks to only read like a small percentage of it. So you really have to have the right kind of hook to grab people right away online, which wasn't always the case, I think, for in-print reading, which is more of a leisurely experience. At The Atlantic, you know, my editor is always pushing me very much to right away and in a very eloquent way, because we're The Atlantic, you have to write well, grab the person with the thing you're going to tell them and lead them along from the beginning. We can't really have like an overgrown lead paragraph that has some sort of historical anecdote. You need to get into it right away in a really smart fashion. So as I'm saying this to you now, it really sounds like I'm just saying, be really good about smart writing, which I think is still the most important thing if you're looking to be a digital journalist. And, you know, if you're moving into the broadcast area of things, like being able to produce videos and documentaries for the web is a different format, obviously, than what you'd see on TV or cable. And that's something that is worth looking into, too.
There's a story out in the loose. Do you decide that whether it's print or multimedia beforehand, or you just kind of evolve to whatever the story entails?
Yeah, it's the latter. I usually evolve to whatever it needs. And I like challenge myself. Like I always usually go into a story thinking, okay, how could I incorporate both words and images and graphics? But a lot of times in the course of reporting it or kicking the tires on the story, I'll realize it's not really worth my time to pursue the added effort of including some sort of interactive element, and I'll just do it as a straight story. But other times you find out, you know, really this is not even necessarily worth writing up, but is a much better kind of graphical experience. And sometimes I've ditched stories that I thought were going to be, you know, magnum opuses and really super long, and instead I went through kind of an interactive step-through experience instead. I really try to keep an open mind in the beginning.
Let's see, what's your favorite multimedia piece that you've ever done?
Great question. I'm only mildly prepared to answer right now. I think one of the things I think I liked the most was a kind of a fun piece I did, which was looking at campaign advertising in Iowa. So this was right before the caucuses. A huge storm of advertising from political candidates, because there were like, you know, 24 Republican candidates, not that many, but there were a ton. And there were a ton of ads in Iowa. And I wanted to show the reader exactly how hard it would have been to avoid watching a political ad if you were watching TV in Iowa before the election. And I was originally thinking of a story and a graphic, but I thought maybe this could be like a game where you are an Iowa person, you're shuttling back and forth along the screen, and descending from the top of the screen are the political ads themselves, little blocks of time, and it actually they're arrayed in the same position and order that they were actually broadcast. And essentially your job is to dodge between the ads and not watch any because, you know, you're annoyed and you're sick of this election. And really it was kind of an exercise in futility because at some points in the course of the game, you know, every single channel in Iowa had a political ad playing. So you would automatically basically come to the point of death almost. And being able to code that and being able to show that to readers in a different way, in a more interactive way, in a more fun way was really cool for me because I think that not everything you produce for a place like The Atlantic has to be super weighty or super literary. You know, it can be a bit more fun too.
What did you use to code that? HTML, Java, Python?
Yeah, pretty much entirely HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. This is all what they would call the front-end languages, which are stuff that you can you don't need a server for. It all runs in your on your website natively in the browser. You know, typically journalists ask what I should learn to code. And I say, well, you should probably learn HTML so you can know how your website is structured. Then you probably should learn a little bit of CSS, which is how it is styled, how it gets its colors and its borders and stuff. And then if you're really into it, learn JavaScript, which is how the website becomes interactive. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, JavaScript is probably the hardest thing to learn, but it powers everything that I do.
What about C++?
C++ is not really quite as relevant outside of like computer science applications. You know, for a journalist, if you're learning a server-side language, that would be kind of what C++ would be. I would learn Python. I would even consider learning Node.js, which is what I use a lot. That's an implementation of JavaScript for the server. And this is all heavy, complicated technical stuff that you guys can look into more later. But those are the two kind of languages I use the most for like heavy-duty computational stuff.
Any news on when the interactive game is going to become a board game?
I do love board games. One of our designers at The Atlantic actually invented a board game.
Really?
That was, what's it called? It's called Vast. I think you can get it online. It was received quite well, I understand, in board game circles. Okay. So
board game circles.
Maybe soon we'll collaborate on that.
What sort of board game circle?
There are conventions of board games where apparently you know, the new stuff gets rolled out, and he was very successful.
You know what? You learn something new every day.
Yes, you do.
And that made me lose my train of thought, too. So, how do you feel about GitHub? Because that's all we're doing in J24, kind of creating interactive experiences in our GitHub and whatnot.
Yeah, GitHub is great. You know, it's essentially right now what powers the open source movement. And, you know, as a developer on the internet, I rely so much on tools that other people have built and essentially give away out of the goodness of their heart. And GitHub essentially is the repository that holds all that. So I am a frequent user. I try to post as much of my code on there as I can, just because I know how much I've benefited from other people's. I want to be able to give back to it.
So people can pretty much learn from each other from open source code.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. I never took a computer science class in college. My only qualifications were I was, again, a nerd in middle school, did some basic programming there, and picked it up again after I left college. And I went through thousands of tutorials online. And basically anyone that wants to get into coding can do the same thing. I think that there's so many resources that are put on there that involve like actual projects and stuff, like building stuff as you learn, that you can teach yourself programming if you kind of want to devote the time to it. Mm-hmm.
You are listening to Prof Talks only on WLVR Bethlehem, 91.3 FM.
Then what sparked your interest in like kind of learning how to code and watching all these videos?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, literally, I was at the morning call in Allentown. It was my first job, and I had this task where I was assigned to go out to essentially local police stations every once in a while and look through their arrest reports and see if, you know, someone had like kicked a dog or something, right? Look for interesting things. And it was really annoying to drive out to these places. And I realized that they posted these reports online, but they were kind of in a hard way to find. You couldn't really put them all in one place together. You couldn't have easily flipped through them like you could at the police station. So I said, I probably could write some computer code. I'm reaching back to middle school at this point, that could pull all of these PDFs, essentially, put them all in one place, and I could just run through them without having to leave my desk. And I realized I had no idea how to do that. I basically began a long string of Googling to figure out what language would I use. What methods would I use, and began prototyping that and learning as I went along. And that really opened my eyes to the fact that, A, I could learn to do things on computers more than I thought I could, and that there was an immediate application to my professional career.
Yeah, especially it's so easy to find free coding courses online too, like Code Academy,
yeah,
Scratch,
absolutely,
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm used Code Academy before. I'm actually a big user of Code School, which is a paid variant. It has some really good, high quality, higher level courses. There's so much more than there used to be even, you know, 5-6 years ago.
So how do you implement this in your teaching style at Penn State?
Well, I think I'm very practical oriented. So a lot of my students' time is spent actually doing projects, actually doing assignments, because it's sort of honestly boring to hear me preach about spreadsheets. There's really probably couldn't be a more boring class. So I very much say, okay, here's a data set. Let's build a story out of this. And here's the tools you're going to have to learn to use this time to be able to tell this story. And really the course is just a succession of learning about these different ways to analyze data and to make visualizations, all with the purpose of building a story. That's super important to me that there's a practical orientation for everything that I do. And occasionally we'll go into kind of week-long tangents about ethics and journalism. We did a whole week on the open source community. But I'm very much like, let's practice what we preach and let's put our skills into implementation right away.
So I assume you teach more courses in coding than in journalism itself.
Well, let's face it. I teach one course right now because I'm pretty busy at the Atlantic. and my one course right now is data journalism. So this is it's not very coding intensive. It's very much more using tools and using spreadsheets to sift through data and write stories. But it will give students, and it does, I hope, an idea of what's possible and some basic skills to be able to shuttle this into their own lives.
Kind of a jumping off point, per se.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the course, they haven't gotten there yet. But my final lesson is, here's what's next. If you want to pursue visualization, here's the things to learn. If you want to pursue graphic design, here's what you should learn. If you want to learn computer programming, here's what you should learn. It'll be up to them kind of to figure out what direction, if they want to, that they can proceed on.
So the final project isn't just like one big code thing. It's kind of choose your own path.
To a degree. Yeah. That's where I want them to end off. And they do have a final project where they have to write a story based off of data that they find themselves. But how they choose to tell that story is up to them.
Very interesting. What do you think the most submissions were in? Like infographics, video?
For my students?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of put my finger on the scale a little bit because for a lot of it, they had to write stories and they had to make graphics. Video wasn't a huge part of it just because that's a bit more technically demanding and I don't always know where students are coming from. But for instance, you know, at the end of the course, they will learn how to make an interactive map that can show points on a map you click on and see stuff happen. They'll know how to make bar charts and line charts and they'll know how hopefully to take a spreadsheet and figure out what's important about it and write a story.
See, I don't know if you've heard about the Lehigh's DataNetX initiative, but it's the idea that coding is everywhere now and these skills, so they're putting coding in pretty much every single department at Lehigh. And so I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a super important thing because at the Atlantic even we're trying to do that. We have a product development team, which is a really elite group of coders, but they're often their section of the newsroom. And I think that there's a push to put more coders directly with each section, be it politics, be it culture, be it science and tech. So we can kind of build a momentum towards having cool projects grow out of these staffs instead of kind of being forced down from a central team.
So since you have all these coders and infographics people, et cetera, do you think there will be a time where there'll just be a section just filled with interactive maps and infographics and whatnot?
Hard to say. I think New York Times has done a good job with that, with the Upshot project. That's kind of a standalone vertical that specializes in data journalism and visualization. They've kind of hit on the right special sauce to make that work, and I think 538 has as well. I don't know if The Atlantic will do that. I think that we're very kind of, like I said, literary in how we think about news, and we're very kind of cross, I was going to say cross-generational, but cross-directional. We have a lot of different teams that work around each other and work through each other. I don't think we'll ever have a central portal where it's like, here's where you'll go for data science. I think you'll see that distributed through the good journalism we're already doing.
Do you think written journalism and data journalism go hand in hand, or can you tell one story without the other?
I think they absolutely go hand in hand. This is something that I always try to emphasize to my students and to other people professionally, that data journalism is just journalism. It's using exactly the same kind of question-asking techniques that people have been using for 100 years or more. We're just doing it with a computer. And every story I write, I still need to talk to a real person to get a human part of the story. I still need to be able to craft a narrative that will be entertaining to a reader. The fact that I'm working with a spreadsheet at the beginning of it doesn't change the fact that I'm telling a story at the end of it.
Is there anything you'd like to add or anything you wish I asked?
No, I think that you guys have a really cool initiative going on with DataX, and that Lehigh, all the times I've been here, has always been, seemed to me to be a good incubator of new stuff. I'd like to think that Atlantic's the same way, and I'm hoping that we'll kind of be able to grow the same way you guys are, but mostly, it's a pretty exciting time to be in journalism, and I'm grateful that I'm able to use my middle school nerd skills to have some fun.
Is there any place they can follow you on social media?
Sure. I'm at Andrew McGill on Twitter, and my blog and website is andrewmcgill.me.
And be sure to look out for his board game coming 2018.
Yeah, probably. 2018 sounds good. I'll commit.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it so much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Prof Talk. To hear all the interviews and check out extended material, log on to our archives at wlvr.org.